You're listening to Irish Illustrated Insider with Tim O'Malley and Pete Sampson. I'm Tim Priester. It's Monday, December 9th. The news came out on Sunday that Notre Dame, as expected, is going to the Camping World Bowl. We were pretty uncertain about. I think I wrote about all four opponents at one point. And then then the Athletic threw up Kansas State. I'm like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
but it is Iowa State, 7-5 Iowa State, coached by Matt Campbell. Kind of interesting. Always a guy that a name that you hear as a potential candidate for Notre Dame down the road. Iowa State's better than 7-5, but I realize that most people aren't going to look beyond that. They had one-point losses at Oklahoma and against Iowa. They had a two-point loss at Baylor in September and then lost by fairly narrow margins to Oklahoma State and at Kansas State. But
had a three-point win against Northern Iowa as well.
They did have a three-point and a two-point win against Texas.
Escaped Drake to end last season.
Oh, wow. Well,
love the Drake.
Yeah.
Offensively, a pretty good football team. And defensively, with John Haycock, they've done some really good things. He's been there 4 years. When you consider the Big 12 and how offensive-minded it is, they've done a pretty good job. It's probably of the four teams, as far as balanced offensively and defensively, and when I say four teams, Texas, Kansas State, and Oklahoma State were the other possibilities, it's probably the best balanced team on both sides of the football. And having said all that, I know there's still a lot of people that aren't going to tune in because it's Iowa State, and that is beneath Notre Dame, so to speak.
So, yeah, it's the reaction was either A, Notre Dame should join the ACC, so it could have got the Orange Bowl, or B, turned down the bowl entirely. Those were your two options if you were Notre Dame, based on the fan reaction, which is a bit ridiculous. But I think that just in terms of if you like football games, which I'm assuming most of your listeners, the listeners to this podcast, do like college football, how Clark Lee matches up with that offense is interesting. And you were going to be watching football all night anyway, so why not just start it at noon and then go for a triple header with the two college football playoff games?
If the listeners don't like college football, we're doing something well because they're coming in, tuning in anyway, and mostly we talk about that.
Yeah.
You know, just to back Tim's original point about being better than 7-5, they have been favored in every game this season except for Oklahoma and Notre Dame. They were favored over Baylor, who you pointed out was not yet Baylor, but they were favored over Baylor in that loss. They were favored over Texas. They were favored at Kansas State. They're only a 3.5-point underdog to Notre Dame, and this is not an official line because they weren't playing those other teams, but according to a Vegas website, Notre Dame was going to be a bigger favorite in order. Biggest favorite would be Texas, then Kansas State, then Oklahoma State, then Iowa State. So in Vegas's eyes, they are better than a 7-5 team because they were favored in 10 games this season.
And the opening line is?
3.5.
3.5.
Which I found low. Saying all that, I was like, what? 3.5? Really? Which is troublesome because if I find that low, having not watched Iowa State, the people that did watch Iowa State know something about it that I don't.
Yeah. Brock Purdy.
That's what they know. That's what they know about it, probably, is that he can play.
I hear he's pretty good.
Yeah.
Just move on from that one.
No, 3,760 yards. There's only seven quarterbacks in the country that threw for more than 3,000. Yards this year, and he's one of them, and he's pushing 4,000 yards. Number five in the country, I think, in terms of total yards passing. Only 27 touchdowns with that much yardage, which I find a little bit interesting. Defensively, John Haycock is their defensive coordinator. They run out of a three-man front. They drop eight a lot. Even in sometimes in short yardage situations,
get rid of the chart, Pete. Mm-hmm. Drop it a lot.
So I think I think it's going to be interesting because that tells me, having watched a little bit of them, that and they drop eight a lot, that they're going to force Notre Dame. Okay, you want to beat us? Run it. Let me see you run it. And when they drop eight, there's always a spy for the quarterback. So there's no easy exit or access for Ian Book to run because they compensate for that in the way they drop eight.
That would seem that spy could have been covering Cole Kmet, though.
They will sometimes actually use two linebackers to kind of spy the line of scrimmage. So, that makes sense. I don't know. I've just seen a little bit of them, but to me, this is a situation where it's like, okay, Notre Dame, you want to prove you can run? Prove you can run against this.
I think that one of the biggest compliments I could give Haycock is that Brian Kelly was interested in him to replace Brian Van Gorder, and they went with Mike Elko instead, which obviously worked out because it got to Clark Lee. But that Brian Kelly's hires from outside of his coaching tree have been almost 100% hits. Haycock would have been one of those. The fact that he's at Iowa State, and I think Matt Campbell is obviously very highly regarded in the coaching community. I've talked to Notre Dame assistants about him, just sort of like, is he as good as everyone says that he is? And I'm like, yeah, this guy's the real deal. So I think Haycock's part of that. It will be a challenge, I think, for Notre Dame's offense to be successful. Can Notre Dame run the ball as well as Brian Kelly thinks that they run the ball? I'm not so sure about that, but a healthy Jafar Armstrong and a healthy Tony Jones, you could at least get the running back dynamic sets that you thought you were going to have starting at Louisville that you never really had until really the Stanford game.
And, you know, there were moments there, and it was before Hainsey and Kramer went down, but there were moments in with Virginia in the second half and USC where Notre Dame's running game looked like it was going to be coming around. As soon as Jones got hurt at Michigan, and they weren't going to run at Michigan anyway, it became Ian Book was the running attack. I just mentioned to Tim prior to this podcast, he ran for more than two times as many first downs in November than he did in the previous seven games, which is just means he was not part of the rushing attack until the loss to Michigan.
Right.
That's why when you mention the spy, I find that interesting. They're going to either have to, Book's going to have to read that and either be able to run, or as Pete said, if that means Cole Komet's got a little bit more room down the seam, then obviously Notre Dame fans like that more than the Book scramble anyway. But it is a fun matchup from pure football X's and O's point of view, and I get it if you hear the team Iowa State and don't, I think what's the word we use?
Yeah,
needle is the thing. We all know that. But they're a better football team than Texas. I'd rather play Texas too.
Earlier in the week, I mean, Texas has more athletes. They clearly have way more athletes, especially on the defensive side of the ball.
Sounds better 5 years later if you beat Texas.
Why I'm saying we're not going to try to convince anybody to watch the game. If you don't want to watch the game, I mean, so be it. We're gonna write and talk about a matchup, a football game, just like we would any other football game. But I just want to say a couple things about Iowa State. They only beat one team in their conference that finished with a winning record, and that was Texas. There are five teams in the Big 12. Of course, the Big 12 has 10 teams. So five of the 10 teams rank 90th or lower in pass defense, passing yardage allowed.
That's when we'll be interested to see Purdy in the offense against Clark Lee with a couple weeks to prepare. Even longer than that. Clark Lee although they won't be preparing the players on the field the entire time for Iowa State, Clark Lee will be hard at work on what he's going to prepare them for in about a 7-day crunch probably for Iowa State. We talk about how these bowl practices go. They're not touching Iowa State for a little while, right?
No. And I mean, statistically, Iowa State, I think, is number two offense that Notre Dame has played in scoring offense behind USC, and number two in yards per play that Notre Dame has played behind Navy. So it's something, whatever they're doing is working.
Yeah, they're averaging 34 points a game. They're third highest scoring team in the Big 12 behind Baylor and Oklahoma, or Oklahoma and Baylor.
I was rooting for Baylor at the end of that game with their third string quarterback. Yeah. So I must admit.
You had to be. But Purdy, I mean, he's got a free and easy throwing motion, kind of Davis Mills-ish from Stanford, only I think I like Mills a little bit better. But obviously they throw it a whole lot more. They've got four wide receivers that catch a bunch. They've got a big tight end that catches a bunch. Brees Hall's their running back.
I do think if you're a Notre Dame fan, all these things sound better as a challenge to take on defensively than, boy, they do not mind running the ball at you, and they are going to test Notre Dame the way Michigan did, and they're going to bang and bang and bang. I like Notre Dame's ability to go against this.
Right, I wrote about that today. Yeah. I mean, it's total strength versus strength. Yeah. Notre Dame's pass defense against their pass offense. And one last thing just about Notre Dame has nothing to gain with this. 2 weeks after the game is over, or whatever, Notre Dame's 11-2. That's the only thing that matters. It's not March and April and May and June. You're saying, yeah, but they beat Iowa State in a bowl game. You were 11-2 last year. Now, if you lose, obviously you're going to hear about that January through September.
Right.
But just win and move on, and you're 11-2, and you have 33 wins in 3 years. And you talk about that, you don't talk about Iowa State. But even a win over Iowa State is a nice win. It's not something you expect to have in a bowl game, but it's still a nice win. If it happened during the regular season,
Yeah, they'd be touting, why didn't we move up a spot? Right. We beat Iowa State.
Exactly.
Stumping for like,
come on.
We had that quality win over Navy.
Yeah. I did.
Well, 15, is the fact that they couldn't get out of the 15 is, while I agree, is ridiculous, it's also the least of the problems right now. It doesn't matter. You want to get screwed sometime out of rankings, how about getting screwed between 6 and 15 rather than 4 and 5 someday, all right? So this is whatever.
Should Notre Dame be higher than 15th? Yeah, I think they should be.
13th.
Yeah, great. 12, like, 13. Yeah. I mean, it's fine. But
it's like to get into discussions on Twitter with people who, they're like, well, Notre Dame should be ahead of Utah. I'm like, yeah, no, I understand your argument
there. I agree
with that. But then that quickly becomes like, well, if you look at the resume, they should be higher than Baylor, Penn State, and Florida, too, and maybe even Alabama. And it's like, just stop.
Why not just argue that Notre Dame and teams ranked 6 to 15 could have played it many times this year and beaten each other?
Sure.
It doesn't make you that much necessarily better, though.
It does
5 to 15, even.
It does make me laugh a little bit when I hear this emphasis on beating ranked teams, Navy, Virginia, and Virginia Tech.
People have been couching it quite a bit with their – they beat three ranked teams. Of course, they're ranked 22, 23, 24.
It's like a recruiting analyst headline of Notre Dame visits intriguing prospect. Well, and then you click on the link and it's a three-star. Like, when it's a five-star, it's in the headline. When it's a three-star, it's intriguing. When it's top 25, that means it's teams 22, 23, and 24.
Yeah. I thought
if it was top 10, that would be something else.
Virginia at the time, that was a nice win. They're a really good defense. You made some things happen defensively and gave yourself a short field. Considering the way Navy had been playing with their quarterback and how dangerous they were, that was a nice win. Virginia Tech, I mean, that was a hangover game that they were fortunate to win.
At the time, it was seen not as a nice win, the Virginia Tech win, but it was actually a nice win. You know, I will say, I give some Notre Dame fans credit that have been arguing about this, though. Everyone has looked at 1, 2, 3, and no one's saying, like, well, we really could have competed for that this year. You know, because Oklahoma at number 4 is getting a 50 spot put on them in the playoff game.
I don't think there's really
much. Is it better to get a 50 spot put on you than be in the Camping Bowl? Yes, but it's still going to happen. So those top three teams are head and shoulders above 4, 5, and 6. And if you want to take the other teams up to 15, you could play all those teams 5 to 15 and could beat teams at certain times. Like, Alabama has the worst resume ever in the history of a top 15 team, but you know they probably would be ranked, I mean, favored against every team in the country, including Oklahoma, other than those top three.
Right.
So they have the talent. They have the players. They didn't do anything by resume this year, but let's be realistic, right?
They lose too much talent every year, underclass talent. Although Ohio State has consistent, when Urban Meyer was still there, they were consistently losing juniors in addition to their seniors.
Yeah, I'm much more interested in why Notre Dame was able to put up 17 points and 320 yards against Georgia, and LSU was able to just tear them to shreds. That's way more interesting to me than if Notre Dame is 15th or 12th.
Because Chris Fink had a bad shoulder.
That would have made all the difference, you think?
Because
you're saying Jamar Chase had two good shoulders?
On one interception, it would have made a big difference.
They couldn't run the ball, so you're not going to score much against them if you don't have any kind of balance against them either.
You know, Clemson, over the last month and a half when the committee moved them down to number 5, I have never seen more of a case of, all right, watch this. Yeah. Just going out. They didn't murder anybody any good. But they murdered people.
Dabo Sweeney is clinging to that. And I get it. He's a coach. He's in a position to do that. But
they're favored. 2.5 over Ohio State.
They are favored. Interesting. I get where he's coming from. But it's a total reflection of your conference.
I had to get into a little thing on Twitter when I saw that Todd McShay said Clemson's an unknown. We don't know enough about Clemson.
Really?
Before that game. And every touchdown, I was just thinking to myself, T. Higgins, I know that guy. Travis Etienne, known quantity. Justin Ross, pretty well known. Trevor Lawrence, throwing 60-yard bombs off his back foot.
I've heard of those guys.
You know Alabama is really good.
Right.
You know Clemson is really good. Eyeballs.
I began it with, I know way too much about Clemson to call them an unknown.
Yeah.
Felt it all.
We've had some questions about injuries, and although we haven't, Brian Kelly did comment on Tonga Bailoa, Mosa, and Aaron Banks on Sunday and said they've been cleared. There was no comment about Jason Adamiola, but I wouldn't think there's any question as to whether he's back. I know that Jarrett Patterson suffered a hand injury. I don't know that was publicized In the Stanford game, but he should be fine too. So Lacy, I don't. Lacy, is there anybody else?
Lacy played since Michigan. Well, he missed one game, but since then with the shoulder injury, that he probably would have sat out some. But he'll
yeah, play. He's played more and more and more.
He had to. Adamiola was really never a game time decision back in mid November and for Stanford, but it's also a sprained ankle with a month and a half to heal.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly seems like the guys who can play will play. You're not going to get Hainsey, Kramer, Okwara back. But everybody else who's available should be ready to go, including Khalid Kareem and Chase Claypool. I think we would all agree those are the two guys. If two guys were going to sit out the game for draft purposes, those would be the two that I'd be interested to watch.
We will talk more about that possibility in segment two. It is a question. Anything else we want to hit in this portion? Just be 11-2. Just
80 degrees in Orlando. They can play anybody they want. The
extended forecast, by the way, is looking pretty good in Orlando, which would be a lot different than it was 2 years ago.
I would have been on pins and needles yesterday if it was between Orlando and El Paso, but it was just going to be between some team, the Camping World Bowl, so it was fine.
True.
Didn't matter.
True. Segment two coming up, burning up the boards.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Segment two, burning up the boards of Irish Illustrated Insider. We start with a question from Way to Go K-Man. Will anyone sit out the bowl game?
Sounds like no, according to Brian Kelly, although he admitted he hasn't really been around the team much for the last week because he's been out recruiting. If Chase Claypool came in and said, you know what, I want to make sure that I'm 100% healthy for the combine and I don't want to play in this game, I think that would be fine. I couldn't sit here and say, like, no, you need to play in this game due to traits and whatnot. You know, at some point you have to make a business decision, and I understand if players at this point would make it about now, but I don't think that I don't think Claypool or Kareem are wired that way.
Exactly.
Nor are they first round picks.
They're not Christian McCaffrey.
No,
decided to save. Yeah, I think you make a good point that the two guys that are available to do it aren't wired that way.
So yeah,
Notre Dame's can get.
It'd be fine if they were. Like, I don't have a problem with that.
Gilman, you know, but I mean, Gilman
is super not wired.
No, he's definitely not wired that way. But no, as far as guys that,
right,
you know, not that he's a high draft pick because he's not, but you know, he would have something to preserve, I guess, and he won't do that either. So, I would think that there would have been some indication of Brian Kelly at this point, right?
Right. I would think that he would know by now.
Yeah, it's like. If Jalen Smith was here again, or a talent at the level of Jalen Smith, Quentin Nelson was a real conversation. I think, speaking of guys who are not wired that way, but in terms of his draft position, if you're a top 10 pick, I totally get it.
Quentin Nelson, on very good authority from someone you both know well, talked about coming back to Notre Dame for his fifth year. Is how he is not wired that way.
Right.
He didn't like the Miami game and the everything.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, it's impossible for a guy to do that because you're way beyond that. But that is what's in that guy's mind is maybe I could come back to Notre Dame. No, you can't. You're not allowed to come back here.
The story that I heard on that, they were doing a full contact scrimmage for bowl prep for the Citrus Bowl. And I believe Chip Long was addressing the offense. And they're like, all right, full contact to guys. And Quentin Nelson got up, slammed his hands down on the table and said, "Let's blanking go." And the McGlinchey's more like, "Ooh, my back." You know, I mean, in that game,
like normal because you're going to a practice.
Yeah, in that game, you know, EQ St. Brown's hamstring, ooh, got real tight.
Yeah, no, it did.
You know, Josh Adams was
needed for the next couple years too.
Yeah, Josh Adams needed foot surgery. I get that.
Yeah, Josh wasn't wired that way at all.
But
yeah, CJ Procise. I mean, we've kind of we've speculated about that, but we don't know whether. No, whoa, whoa, whoa. Let me finish.
He never stopped running. Everybody went to the sidelines when he missed that ball.
Yeah.
director of the tunnel.
We don't know how he felt going into the game.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying.
I feel like Brian Kelly gave us a little bit of an answer when we asked about ProSize, and he gave him the old "you'll have to ask him."
Well, that's true. Now that's true. That's true. But
I love the Nelson thing, though.
Yeah, that was great.
Can you imagine Quentin Nelson on the 2018 team?
No, I think he might have killed someone, like a freshman on Ball State or something like that. Think about it. Like, those guys can't handle that.
I thought you meant like a teammate in
practice.
Well,
I mean, that could have happened too.
Yeah, I believe that also came close to occurring.
Have you seen how ridiculously massively large he is now?
Yeah, did you see it in the Tampa Bay puncher video?
Yes, he's as big as a house.
Yeah, it's...
He is massive.
I went on too much about Nelson, but I think we do have to tell the quick story again about Bonner saying, yeah, you know, I wasn't going to come back for my fifth year, but let's put it this way. I was playing all season long with a broken wrist, and I weigh 270 pounds, and I go against Quentin Nelson every single day. How much fun would you have at practice?
The game just wasn't quite as fun as it used to be. Denver Maximus, what are your initial impressions about playing Iowa State? Are you excited? Is it a good matchup or one that scares you if a 7-5 team beats Notre Dame?
Well, the last part, no. I'm intrigued to see like what Matt Campbell's operation is actually like. I certainly have mentioned it many times on this podcast that I am an admirer from afar of Mr. Campbell, and so I'm curious to see what he's like up close.
You can't say Iowa State and be super excited, but football makes it the X's and O's, and Matt Campbell makes an exciting matchup for me.
It's at noon.
Oh, well, that's super exciting, but that's the same thing with Orlando at noon is out of this world great. But Notre Dame winning, what I think I like about it if you're a Notre Dame fan is the five straight wins. I could see really not wanting to play this game if it's 9-3 Notre Dame that also lost
two of its last three.
Even like that 2017 team, you're like, how did we end up here?
Right.
They didn't in 2017, but the way they're playing, I think everybody should want to play and see Notre Dame play again.
Yeah, initial impressions of Iowa State are that they're a very well-coached football team, and that's not very surprising. I think they maximize what they have on both sides of the football. I'm not overly first impression about the athletes on the defensive side of the ball. I don't see a ton, but I think that's where Haycock makes up with some scheme and strategy. They can really throw it. I don't really know. Breece Hall is their running back. He's a freshman. He's listed at 6'1", 205. He looks pretty slight. So I don't think that they're going to run a whole lot against Notre Dame. So they're going to wing it. Purdy throws 40 times a game, just about every game.
On a related question to this, because we can get into it now, Mike Rose, 43-10. Other than solid coaching and QB play, which you're talking about, Tim, are there any other areas of Iowa State's game that should worry Notre Dame?
Well, I would say Haycock, just because of the way they've built their defense. Now, they're not scoring defense isn't as good as it was the last 2 years, but it's still way better than it was when he first got there, which is 31 a game. So just enough scheme there. And especially since I think they're going to force Notre Dame to prove that they can run, I think that's enough to be a little bit concerning when you take everything into consideration.
ND Band in 94, if you were the head coach of Notre Dame, how would you approach the bowl game? I think there's two different questions here, but play the starters till you have the game won and then work in the backups to give them experience, or play as many as you reasonably can, even if it means you might lose?
I guess I still don't understand the question.
The question, I take it, if you're the head coach of Notre Dame, how do you approach the bowl game, is a valid question in that I thought he meant practice.
No, I think that's part of the question, yeah.
In practice, I believe they will approach it like they do all non-playoff and BCS games. It is time for the young players to play. Elohi Gilman, Jalen Elliott, Khalid Kareem, they are taking a break.
The older guys won't do much until within 7 days before the game.
And they won't do much on Iowa State specific with the players until 7 days before the game. Because you're just looking at freshman year CJ ProSize to see what he's going to be. Freshman year Torrey Hunter Jr. This is where guys come up the ranks a little bit. Because they've hopefully improved since August, but have been on the scout team, and you can't truly look at guys. You can't. If you're Brian Kelly, there's only so many guys you're going to look at as the season progresses, right? Even with this four-game rule. So I think it's a lot of the 3- and 4-game guys get so much playing time here, but the bowl game will be just like any other game where Ian Book takes every snap and so does the offensive line and so does Chase Claypool.
I go back to what I think we said the last podcast. I mean, how many guys are they supposed to play? They play a lot of guys on both sides of the football, especially defensively. So there's only so many that you're going to roll out there. But you never play. I don't care what the situation is. You got to win. You got to play to win the game.
You're not taking a look at DJ Brown in the game when you have Alohi Gilman.
No, he's not going to gain enough by that one little experience to sacrifice a loss to Iowa State and going to the offseason 10-3.
I don't know if it was Pete or you, Tim, that mentioned Jordan Jenmarkeith's a different situation because they had bad safeties and they wanted to see what they had.
Right.
Like this was, yeah. That was a, hey, maybe he can give us something. And he
right.
did.
And he did. Yeah. He absolutely did. Yeah, I agree. And they've played, KJ Wallace, I mean, it's not the time to do that. There's plenty of time in the spring. And all that they do during the summer, plenty of time to build those guys up.
Utah Domer, of the following, who returns to Notre Dame next season? I'll ask as we go along. Ian Book.
Back.
I'm going to say back, maybe, or gone. And I'm going to...
Those are all three. What are,
but
are
not, not, not grad transfer, you're saying?
No.
Oh, yeah. Okay. No. All right. Yeah. There was another
no, option. No. What? Grad transfer. Yeah.
No, I thought you were saying
no,
back or not. Because, you're like, both.
Okay, because some of these guys I think are going to come back. Some of these guys I think are going to leave, and a couple that I'm not sure of. And I would say I lean towards Book come back, but I'm not sure of that.
I'm back more so than Tim, I think. Tony Jones Jr.
That one I have no idea.
That's one I have no idea either.
That's why I got a maybe in there. Yeah. I'm the same way.
Javon McKinley's no.
That's a gone.
Yeah.
And as far as I know, he's not grad transferring.
He's retiring.
Yeah.
Oh, that I don't know.
Yeah, I think that that's true, but we're all convinced that there won't be a fifth year at Notre Dame.
Ade Ogundeji.
Back for sure.
He's back for sure.
Back for sure. Sean Crawford.
He's back.
He's back.
So you guys tell me.
He's back.
I just haven't talked to him about it.
We're pretty sure that first of all, there's no doubt that he'd be granted a sixth year. I mean, that's a formality.
Yeah, you get that. Yeah.
And as far as we know or hear, he's likely to come back,
which is hugely important for an otherwise very young secondary.
Seems like Alohi Gilman is gone, though.
I do think so, too, because despite his grade, I think he's done.
Yeah, I think he just wants to take a shot at it.
Yeah, and that's I do not blame him at all.
And again, he had a year of prep school before Navy, so that next year would be the equivalent of his sixth year since high school. So
he's just ready to go. He's going to go despite a grade, but I don't blame him because he's not going to be 6'2", 215 next year.
No, and if he wants to come back, that would be really good too.
Oh, goodness. Gilman and Crawford come back with Kyle Hamilton. Everything just changed. The secondary, all of a sudden.
No doubt. We talked about that, how significant that could be.
I think, Pete, you were here for that one a month ago. I said, if Alohi Gilman comes back, Kyle Hamilton's an All-American
next year.
Because you don't have to do anything.
So if you're saying football. You only get one out of the two, okay. Well, you'll take that.
Todd Light.
I think he will depart.
I agree.
Jeff Quinn. Save the best for last. There,
don't
Tim,
know. Right? That's the Tony Jones of the coaching list.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that.
Can I say
either.
On staff employed by Notre Dame?
No.
It's your podcast.
What?
You can say whatever you want.
It's your...
There's like a fourth.
In what capacity?
Tony Jones can't be like reassigned.
No, but like...
I don't know. I'm just saying that's the fourth. There's a fourth option.
Associate
there.
Athletic director? They don't have enough of those, you know?
I mean, I guess I think he'll be back.
I would guess. I would guess he comes back, don't you?
You know, Brian Kelly, I thought, sort of came to his defense tangentially during the Camping World Bowl press conference about like, hey, look, we lost our two best starting offensive linemen. The run game is what it is, which he's not wrong about. I don't know too many offensive lines that play great with their two best starters out. However, I still think the line should have been better.
I don't know why Notre Dame shouldn't have one of the 10 best offensive line coaches in the country, if not top five. I mean, why shouldn't they?
That's the place you would go for it, I would think.
Yeah, and I don't think they have one of the 5 or 10 best offensive line coaches in the country.
Very quickly on this one, if people are wondering about Tony Jones, it's because not only we can't get a read on him, but like if he wants to give the pros a shot, and whether you listening think that's possible or not, now is the time to give them a shot because you just had a good year, you're healthy. So this would be the time to go. If he doesn't think he can be in the NFL, like in his mind, he doesn't think of himself as an NFL player, he should come back because then he could have one more fun year of football.
Yeah, Big Mac 24. If Todd Light were to move on, who are possible replacements?
What about Kerry Cooks? He's at Texas Tech. He was when Lincoln Riley took over as head coach at Oklahoma, he was one of the guys that was purged with the defensive staff. He's at Texas Tech. Why not?
Makes a lot of sense given something that happened to me this morning. Yeah, I'll just keep to myself at this point. Me too. I hadn't thought about that when it happened, but now I'm thinking about it. Yeah, I think the relationship's there. He certainly knows what it takes to recruit here.
About this, Pete?
I don't. I would throw out one other option that would I think be a little unconventional, but if you gave Terry Joseph the entire secondary.
Yeah.
And then you promoted Nick Lazinski to linebackers coach with Clark Lee, because I if Clark Lee left, I'm pretty sure Nick Lazinski would be his first hire as linebackers coach. He is incredibly well regarded in the building. You know, it would be a risky move.
So Clark Lee just has more time to coordinate everything.
Right.
It doesn't work.
You know, I think it would be very taxing for Terry Joseph as well to coach an entire unit that just essentially like the entire. It's like, you know, you're coaching five or six guys. It's very complicated. I'm not advocating for that. I think that bringing Kerry Cooks back to work with Terry Joseph would be the right. Mm-hmm. That would be the move that would make the most sense to me.
They're very young group for Joseph, too. Like, this past group, he probably could have coached by himself. I mean, one guy could have Gilman and Elliott, because you're not doing as much with Gilman and Elliott. Next year, you're doing it with everybody, including Kyle Hamilton. Right.
Yeah. You'd need to find, a Lazinski in the secondary, like a GA-plus
person. Like Kyle McCarthy.
Kyle McCarthy at that time.
Right,
basically coaches safeties that year.
Who basically coaches safeties, and it sounds like Lazinski is in the same category as a Kyle McCarthy from a couple years ago, young, exciting prospect.
M. Buescher, 96. If Chip Long goes to Memphis, who do you see replacing him on the staff? Which coaches might go with him? I don't
see him going to Memphis.
I
don't think it's going to happen.
Coaches leaving with him.
I could see Dell.
I could
Dell
see
leaving
Dell leaving with him, because they've known each other so long. They've been together for so long.
To Memphis?
I wouldn't think it's a great move.
I think those two are just like tight. If he's OC at Memphis.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Like, if I was actually thinking Lance Taylor wants to be a coordinator. If that were the case, then I could see them leaving if they were elevated to coordinator. I don't see anybody leaving to just take a position or
no, but coordinator would make sense.
Yeah, no, it certainly would. I've got to believe that Tom Reese is somebody that would be under consideration if Chip Long is gone.
To be Notre Dame's offensive coordinator?
Correct.
He definitely would be under consideration. I don't think that would be a very good idea.
I think that would be a really, really risky move.
I do too. I feel like him as a quarterback coach in this role, at this stage of his life and career.
No, I agree, but I wouldn't rule that out.
But, hey, you know
happening.
What? Matt LaFleur is the head coach of the Green Bay Packers, so
you know,
who knows with these young
we
coaches.
We said 3 years ago that if Jeff Quinn were hired, we would throw air for offensive line. We've heard so much against it, we'll probably throw away our laptops and bag them on our heads, and we're in year three, entering year three. happen.
There's nothing we can do about it.
Yeah. 32 wins later.
Yeah.
The Matt LaFleur, what's Green Bay's record now? Do you have any idea?
I don't know, but they're in the NFL.
I know, right.
To the Niners. I don't know what they did this past
I've been going to the Notre Dame Club Milwaukee for more than 30 years every August.
They're in the NFL.
And they asked me about Matt LaFleur because, you know, they're all Green Bay fans in Milwaukee. And I said, you know, I mean, don't quote me on this. I didn't know the guy that well. But if you asked me what I thought about Matt LaFleur being named the head coach of Green Bay, my response would be, I think he's over his head. Well, I've heard that comment has been thrown back at me a few times.
I'm sure it has. It's really 9-4, 10-3.
Yeah, he's doing a pretty good job. It's still early, but he's doing a pretty good job. So so there's that.
Everybody worried about losing Mike Sanford. He's been fired already. Irish Gambler, what piece can we reasonably expect to be better next year and thus help the quarterback play? Offensive line consistency, explosiveness from the receivers, or more production for the running backs?
The running backs for sure. I would hope that the offensive line would be better regardless, you know, whether it's Jeff Quinn or somebody else. Like, all five starters will be back.
Six.
Like, it's six.
Exactly.
It's set up for a really good year along the offensive line next year. I think the running back is set up for an improved year as well. Receiver will be take a step back. Tight end will be better.
Tight end will be better.
And like wow. one of the things
Michael
that will
Mayer
help
coming in.
One of the things will help the quarterback play is the quarterback. Where he understands the burden of being the Notre Dame quarterback so much differently now than when he did when the season started. That's a very real thing.
I don't know. You can't be more explosive when you lose Chase Claypool. I mean, I know that Lindsey's in there and Keys.
Yeah,
and
you do. You go about it differently. I mean, you'll have
Austin. You'll,
there's pieces. Yeah. Austin, Lindsey, Keys are reasonably expected to step up and play well. The tight ends, I mean, Tremble will really help that group if Tommy Tremble can progress.
No, but Claypool's a beast, man.
Austin.
I mean, he's a beast.
Austin will not be as good as Claypool this next year.
No.
That's the most logical thing we could say. Like, Lindsey could have a really good year. Not as good as Claypool. But you're not getting Boykin to Claypool to Austin in 1 year because he's barely played football.
Right. CMU Pens fan, do you expect Notre Dame to have all of its commitments locked up on early signing day, or will someone play the waiting game?
It certainly seems like they're all expected to sign, from what I can gather.
Me as well. I would be surprised at this point. And that will be 3 years running, right? It's been going on 3 years? That's 3 years running, and that's a really, really good sign. It also shows that you're winning 10, 11 games, 12 games a year. So it would almost be kind of silly for a recruit to bag that at this point.
Not Jay Tufel. Which player that didn't play significant minutes this season has the most upside in your view?
Kevin Austin.
I think we've talked.
That's for sure. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I think
to go back to, I'm not saying he's not going to be very good. Saying Chase Claypool was awesome and a senior that took 4 years to be good.
Sure.
So, yeah.
Kevin Austin, definitely.
Yeah, It's not even close. He didn't play. So let's say someone played. Lindsey's going to be very good. Lindsey has 30 touches and 13 first downs and 11 chunk plays. I did that this morning. 30 opportunities. So 10 targets plus 20 targets plus 10 touches. 30 opportunities. And he has that. So Braden Lindsey should continue this. He has a long way to go as a receiver still. I feel like the deep ball book through him will easily be caught by Braden Lindsey next year when it landed in the field of play deep and he was bending into the corner and it just didn't look like he.
Yeah.
I can't exactly explain to you why the route wasn't perfect, but he didn't run the route way a receiver goes and gets the ball when he's used to running those routes.
Lindsey is. You talk about player development. Lindsey has developed a lot this year. Paul Mawa is a guy as well.
Isaiah Foskey would be
Isaiah Foskey. Howard Cross, I continue to get feedback from coming from the practice field saying this guy is a beast. He is a beast. I want to slip in a basketball question, and there are many questions after this, so you can't leave us if it's like, not a basketball question. But I want to get this.
We will predict the final record for the 2020 football season,
and then we'll,
after this basketball question.
And announce a special signing.
Yeah. Exactly. It's from Dan_Brian21. I don't think anyone expected a basketball team to make the tournament this year, but did you expect it to be this bad? I thought they could put together a 500 season and down ACC, but how many wins do you think they get, and what does the future hold? I wrote about this.
Feel free to take
yes.
this.
No, Tim, you go first. But I mean, because you were there, we were at the game the other night, and I mean, I was going to write this after Maryland, and then the calmer head here, O'Malley, said, "Wait," and I said, "Okay,"
because they're going to lose to BC, is what I said.
Okay, so. and BC was a continuation of what I felt for the first time, and I know a lot of people have been way ahead of this curve. I got you. But I look at things a little bit differently in the profession that we're in. Wednesday, when they got hammered by Maryland, I took my viewpoint of Mike Bray and the future of the Notre Dame basketball program changed forever.
Yeah, that's fair. I think at no point last year did I expect them to make the NCAA tournament this year, is the strongest thing I can say. And now I have verified that will not happen. Last year, at no point did I think that team that everybody was saying, oh, they're trying so hard and they're hurt, had enough good players to make the NCAA tournament this year. And now I have watched them, and that is no longer a ridiculous comment.
This hasn't been said, okay? The entire team returned. Okay, I guess DJ Harvey didn't, but they weren't playing him at the end. The
entire team returned.
The entire team returned, including John Mooney. And In addition to the story that I wrote, and I would encourage people to check that out if you haven't seen it, I just started writing things down that this team lacks. They're not athletic enough. They're not mentally tough enough. They're not physically tough enough. They can't shoot. Player development has been bad. That's a reflection on the coaching staff. Roster management has been outrageously bad.
When you say the whole team returns, not enough players return is part of this.
Right, exactly. And so now they have a couple injuries again. Did I mention injuries on a regular basis now? That's another thing. Offensive flow, which used to be, it was like poetry with Mike Bray. They don't have that anymore. And they want to hang their hat on defense, but anytime they play anybody good, they don't play well defensively. Other than that, and, okay, you have two recruits that I like coming in. I think they're good players, but they're not. They're not difference makers. So the present and the future looks bad simultaneously.
We could probably break down how it all went wrong with the roster, but very quickly, their junior, DJ Harvey, was a top 100 player, and whether you say he was a top 100 junior but not senior, I don't care. DJ Harvey had to hit as the lone player coming in. DJ Harvey had to be at least as good as VJ Beachum. I know they're different players. I'm saying let's get a level of player here. Instead, he's a terrible basketball player that would not play a team game, and they're better off without him as bad as they are. Then they didn't get anybody in this class. You can't have that. They've lost one of the five. They've lost the right one of the five from the current sophomore class. Doherty was going to be a 4 or 5 year project anyway.
Well, but Carmody's out for the year too.
Yeah,
so.
And that's just a really tough loss because he was a guy that was an intriguing player.
Right.
They're just the best class they had coming in. All those top 100 guys, four of them. They haven't played like that. I know they have another year to do that, but they don't have any other players on their team.
Only one player is developed, and that's John Mooney. And so, therefore, I have to come to the conclusion that that was because of John Mooney, because nobody else has developed.
And kudos to him, because I cannot believe how good John Mooney has become.
Exactly.
Let me put this on you, and we move on. Will this be Mike Gray's last year?
I think he'll be back. I think he will be back next year because he is embarrassed about what's going on this year, and he's going to really put something into it to come back next year. I think Swarbrick will give him the benefit of the doubt from previous seasons.
I don't know about that. I mean, I don't know.
That's
I don't
just
know.
My guess.
I know,
that's
but
nice.
It's around 20 years. I don't know that he wants to. I don't want to speak for him. I don't want to speak for the university. All I know is that the magic is gone, and I don't see that coming back. Trait expectations.
great name.
Yeah. Back to football. Project the early difference makers in the 2020 recruiting class.
I think it's all the ones that you know about. I think Michael Mayer will come in and he will challenge to be the number two tight end.
He'll be 2B probably, because Trimble. I think Trimble's experience is going to help him. I know we've talked and you've brought it up last time, Pete, that Trimble needs to mature and all that, and that might not happen between year two and three. I think his experience really helped this year, especially that he finished the year strong after having a massive lull. You know, Tommy Tremble did not have a 10-yard gain in between Georgia and the last two games of the season. So he started extremely strong and ended extremely strong.
Wow.
I think it's good that he ended extremely strong because he was getting a little bit lost there. Great call on Mayer being, you could say 2, I'll say 2B, you know, where
sure.
He's that good.
I just think he's really going to push.
I think
the receiver position will be interesting because I'm not sure between Xavier Watts and Jordan Johnson who will click first. I think that's much closer in terms of their talent level than what your 24/7 arrivals would lead to.
I'm a huge Watts. I think Xavier Watts is a freak. I think he's tremendous. He will definitely be in my top five.
Yes,
and maybe top three.
I think he's my five though, but. And then Tyree, healthy. I think they could work in Chris Tyree because they're going to have a stable of veteran backs around him.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? He doesn't, in other words,
You have to work him and
you
have to use his assets.
And right now people are thinking, well, they couldn't work in Kyren Williams. Guess what? Chris Tyree is a way better athlete than Kyren Williams.
We're talking two different things there.
Yeah, Kyren Williams, I think, just sort of like, what? The moment it's a little bit big as a freshman, that's fine. That happens. If that happens to Tyree, then he also will not play, regardless of how fast he is.
Because there'll be a handful of guys there.
Right.
You're right.
Riley Mills, I realize that it's a crowded house there, but man, that kid is just so physically overpowering and overwhelming. And I love Jordan Batella, but I think that might be a numbers situation.
I think Mills is underrated in this group. There is certain you go out and see certain kids and you end up being there's like a confirmation bias involved with like when you go see kids, like, well, I didn't see everybody, but you end up sort of thinking the guys that you see in person are better than the guys you haven't, even though it logically doesn't make sense. But having seen Riley Mills in person, I was just really impressed with how athletic and flexible he is. I mean, look, we've all seen defensive linemen come to Notre Dame that look a lot like Riley Mills, and they get here and they're stiff and they're awkward and they put on weight and they can't move. Riley Mills is not going to be one of those guys.
And they recruit him as a strong side defensive end, but if you wanted to play him at three technique, he'd be a beast there too.
That's exactly where he's going to play. Yep. I mean, they sold him on Jerry Tillery. He does not move as freakishly as Jerry Tillery does, but there are more similarities than differences there.
Yeah, well,
in terms of how he moves,
because of Tillery's length, that gives him a little bit different dimension.
But first, I want to answer this first one in there from trait expectations. Who are you most excited for next season? Mine is Ian Book. I'm serious. The most excited player I want to see next season is Ian Book, because if Ian Book continues to ascend from here.
Right.
I want to see him play against Wisconsin and other teams.
And then the third question there was rate the health of the Notre Dame football program as we look to the bowl in the offseason. Okay, rate it 1 to 2
thumbs up.
Rate it 1 to 2 thumbs up? You're going with 2 thumbs up?
Okay, on a scale of 5, what would you rate it?
The health of the program is in like the infrastructure and coaching and...
However you want to interpret
4.5?
4.0.
I would lean more towards 4.5, I believe. Blue Chip Man, who has gotten the best end of the deal as it strictly relates to football, Notre Dame or the ACC? Leave the non-football sports out of the discussion.
Well, if we're strictly this week, then the ACC. All the other weeks, it's more of a push to maybe advantage Notre Dame.
I think you've got to look a little bit deeper than not getting the Orange Bowl. And look, I get that because... That stinks, but, you know, you just couldn't.
So does Virginia now.
Yeah, I mean, you just couldn't.
Do people realize Notre Dame would have not been in the Citrus Bowl if it wasn't for the ACC contract? Like, do people get that?
No, they definitely don't get that.
Because there was nobody complaining about it then.
Right, and the other thing that I was going to bring up is that Notre Dame, Jack Swarbrick was right in this. They always wanted to be in the ACC because of the media outlets and where you wanted to recruit. You want to recruit in Ames, Iowa? Or do you want to recruit Or do you want to recruit
Alan Lazard is walking around.
So, I mean, there are other residual benefits for the program. They are where they want to be and need to be. This is not a good situation. They should be playing in the Orange Bowl, but there was no way that John Swofford was going to allow that to be negotiated.
The argument that drives me the most mad is that Notre Dame should be in the ACC so they could have got the Orange Bowl last year, ignoring the fact that if Notre Dame was in the ACC last year, it would not have made the playoff because it would have got beat by Clemson in the ACC championship game. So, like, where's the upside of that? If you were saying Notre Dame should have been in the ACC last year, great. I will hear your argument now that they should be in. But don't be one of those people that started the all-in with the ACC argument on Sunday at 3:45.
Or a few weeks before that, when it was obvious that they weren't going to go there.
I have one follow-up to this. You guys need to stay off Twitter. Maddie Hebbs is really angering you. Maddie Hebbs 14, did you guys get a chance to ask Brian Kelly if there would be any change in availability with Kevin Austin in the bowl game?
Pete asked.
Boom, I did. And he said no.
You caught him, too.
Yeah, because he walked into the trap. Well, actually, no, it's not a trap. He just mentioned it. But it was like my ears perked up when he voluntarily mentioned Kevin Austin. I was like, is he available? He's not available. Thank you.
He's not playing.
Yeah, well.
He didn't play this year either, despite reports that people were hearing that he might play.
Irish Illustrated said in the preseason that he wouldn't play, and he didn't. Now, we talked about this last week. I mean, the possibility seemed like it might be presenting itself, but.
But as Pete said, it's still the first semester.
No, right.
That's we didn't know the gray area
right.
The whole game.
And so a follow up to that is from Mr. Cabral 76, which is it time to update Duloc, the Notre Dame rule book handbook? Kevin Austin's suspension wouldn't even warrant extra laps at other schools.
They just updated Duloc within the last 5 years.
Yeah.
Because they realized it was crazy. Weed was not the same as cocaine.
Right. And I don't agree with the statement Kevin Austin's suspension wouldn't even warrant extra laps at other schools.
No, he would.
An assumption is being made as to what...
M. Cabral doesn't know why the entire suspension happened.
Right. And I...
That's why it wasn't 4 games.
We're not going to get into that. But it... That's an incorrect... I believe that to be an incorrect statement.
Incorrect according to the university. You read the rules.
No doubt. But in relation to, does Duloc need to be updated? It was updated.
Yeah, like 2012, right? 12 or 13, maybe?
I can't remember. Yeah. They had sort of an informal chat with the people who ran it.
In 11, right? We sat down in the...
I think it was later than that. Okay. Because I remember Lake Littman, who covered them for Star, was there. Was, yeah. So it was much later than that. And I asked them, like, explain to me how you came to where you are on marijuana, because they updated that, and they wanted to say, hey, look, you know, we still have a strong stance on it, and I get that, but they said that was, I believe they said that was sort of their number one feedback issue, that was like, you are way too stringent on something that is socially acceptable a lot of other places. That doesn't mean Notre Dame needs to embrace it, but... to treat it the same way that you did as a hard narcotic didn't make any sense. So they have updated. You can talk to Kyle McElarney about this. They've come a long way on weed since when he was here and got thrown off the team on Christmas break because he had it in his car.
Bad call, by the way, driving your car with it.
Yeah.
Not a good decision. Tim, what do you want to say about that?
The extra laps? No, it's false information. Kevin Austin was closer to being kicked out of school than playing football this season.
Yes.
That's the end of that.
Yeah.
And he'll be back and playing next year.
But there's also the segment of people that say, everybody smokes weed. There shouldn't even be a rule against it. Okay, well, if you don't, you've got to have, there's got to be some level of accountability. Otherwise, everybody's coming to practice stoned. And then you're not getting, they're playing games stoned.
Like
because
there
are no
like the Michigan week, apparently.
Because then there would be no repercussions. Is that what happened?
Everybody.
There's got to be a rule, but it had to be less stringent than it was.
Yes, yeah. They have updated it. Is the key to that.
Everybody's you're playing Michigan. Everybody's or whoever. It would have happened against Bowling Green too. You can't do that. There's got to be a rule. All right, last
Ball question. Ball State Week can happen. See, Irish 25 AJS. Lots of coaching extensions getting done. When do you believe Brian Kelly's will be finalized?
This question was placed last for a reason, and Pete, go right ahead.
Talking to people around Notre Dame, I believe that it's imminent. It's been in the works for, I think, since September
When did you sit down with Swarbrick? Was it July? Mine was in August, and we addressed it, and he said that is absolutely at the top of the list, and the intention is to, I said, Brian Kelly has basically stated he wants through 2023, and his response was, we want the same thing.
Yeah. I don't know terms of it or anything. I just know that it's very far down the road in terms of negotiating it out.
Okay. We have no more basketball questions. We're not going to allow any more, but we're going to wrap up our
– You think Digger will talk about the 88-game winning streak to you at the game on Saturday?
There's a good possibility of that. We will be back a week from today on the 16th. We will have access. The Echoes are this weekend. We will actually, that's on Friday night, we'll actually have access. Do we get to see practice too? Or is this post-practice? We don't know about that. But we will have access, presumably with Brian Kelly and the players on Saturday, December 16th. We will continue to gather information and watch Iowa State and try to get an insight into.
You have to always say 7-5 Iowa State. That makes people happier.
Unranked
7-5 Iowa State in the Camping World Bowl. They
playing
love that.
Its first game
they
in
love
Florida
that too.
Ever, apparently,
that's
no the first Iowa State's never played in Florida.
That's what Matt Campbell referenced on the teleconference
Holy
on Sunday.
Holy cow!
I shouldn't go to Miami.
That's okay, fun. All right, sounds good. That's it. It's a wrap. Until next week. Thanks for joining us.
Indiana Dunes Tourism, located between Chicago and South Bend in Northwest Indiana, is a proud supporter of Irish Illustrated. Extend your Notre Dame visit with a trip to the nation's newest national park. Visit IndianaDunes.com.